All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Hey, just to let you know, we got the wrong message went out originally saying there was no show. So right now, questions are really light. I have a feeling they're going to start flooding in because we sent out a new text. But if you have a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all, and you want to get through, press 1 on your phone right now, and we'll be able to get to you. The longer you wait, the harder it will be to get through. We're going to try to do 2 hours today, and I'll keep you updated on the questions. So here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll tackle it here on the air. The list goes on and on. In fact, if you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. Many times we'll get some help from one of the other listeners, and if you stump us all, I'll make it my personal mission to find the answer. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. I do want to remind you it's that time of year again. It's time to get your accounting up to date. Really, you should never not be up to date. But I still know that the vast majority of owner-operators do not have a system to do their books every month. You need to get one. It's not that difficult. You don't have to spend a lot of time on this. You don't have to be an accountant. It's just a matter of recording income and expenses, nice and simple, so that you have a good idea of how much money is coming in, where it's going, what you're spending money on, and where you could spend less. Because every time you can lower expenses or increase revenue, those things put more money in your pocket, but you've got to track those numbers to know. The number one reason you should be doing it is to run your business better. Two, though, is if you are waiting until the end of the year to get all your numbers together, you are paying way too much in tax. You need to be doing this every month. So it's that time of year. I'm going to be bugging you about it. So get a system, get a tax preparer that you can work with and build a relationship with, and have numbers that you can look at every month. If you don't know where to start, we can help. We have a system for everybody. Whether you want to do most of the work, whether you want us to do some of the work, we'll always be there to help, though. So you can give us a call, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. You can always go to the website. It's letstruck.com. Lots of things to talk about today, but I want to get right to some phone calls. We're going to start off in Texas. Javin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to know where would I purchase the keto strips from to test my ketogenic status.
Okay. You can probably the easiest place to find them is on Amazon. They are available in some of the larger pharmacies. Now, the thing to remember about these strips, any of these test devices, they were actually developed for type 1 diabetics to make sure that they don't go into ketoacidosis, which is something totally different, but, you know, that's what the strips were developed for. You're just now starting to see some companies that are realizing there are people who want to test for ketones that are not worried about ketoacidosis. We're doing it to stay on a ketogenic diet. So I haven't really looked in a lot of places. I know you can find them on Amazon. The other thing I'll tell you about, though, the urine strips are about the least accurate. They will tell you pretty clearly when you first go into ketosis, but as your body gets more and more fat adapted, the urine strips are measuring a waste product of ketones. So when our body gets really good at using them for energy, then we don't have nearly as many to detect on the urine strip. So they work good in the beginning, but then some people get confused later on and think they're not in ketosis anymore when they really are.
Okay, which one is the best one and what number should I be shooting for? Because I have the blood pressure thing and I put it on my arm every morning. It's 107 over 72 or 82. I can't remember. Is that
okay,
the same
107
thing?
Over... No, that blood pressure, we're looking for something totally different. I think everybody should be monitoring blood pressure. Now, your numbers, if they're 107 over 72, are excellent. If it's 107 over 82, you would be slightly high on that bottom number, the 82, but not a big deal. And you'll find that throughout the day, you'll get all kinds of different readings. A little bit of caffeine can send the number up. If you are overhydrated, you've been drinking a lot of water, tea or coffee, that can raise the number. It's one of the reasons why I say people should do this on their own. If you're doing it once a year in a doctor's office, that's probably not a very accurate reading. If you're doing it, you know, throughout the day or every couple of days on your own, then you'll get a good number. Yours are good. Nothing to worry about there.
Okay, you say you have
blood
a blood
ketones.
Okay, you say you have a breath strip that,
It's like a little, you know, tube about the size of a cigar, and you blow into it, and it's got lights on it. So the different colored lights will tell you how many ketones you're producing, or you can hook it up to a laptop, and there's an app so you can watch that. And again, you know, I've used this against the blood testing strips for ketones, and it's not as accurate either. It's better than the urine strips, not as good as the blood. What I find with this device is if I'm very active, then my ketone levels that I can measure in my breath seem to go way down. If I haven't been very active for a couple days, then the breath meter seems, again, they're testing different things. And if you work out hard, then you're burning those ketones for energy, and they don't show up as easily in your breath. Honestly, after using all three ways of testing, I just go by feeling. I mean, I can tell when I'm in ketosis. I don't have the hunger. You know, my appetite's very well under control. I have good energy. I'm sleeping good. You just feel good. So you can actually just get to the point where you know when you're in ketosis or not.
The more I stay on the diet, you know, the high fat, low carb. And I purchased that from a pharmacy or Amazon as well.
The Ketonics, that's the name of the breath meter. As far as I know right now, you can only buy it directly through them. And they're actually in Sweden. So it took me like, I think it was almost 6 weeks before I got mine.
Oh, wow. And what number should I be aiming for once I purchase the device?
The device itself, now if you're doing a blood, I'll give that out because this can get confusing. There is a blood meter, just like testing your blood glucose, you can test blood ketones. Pretty expensive, though. I mean, it ends up being a couple dollars per test. The machine isn't expensive. It's only like $40, but the strips are, I've seen them as high as $5 a strip and as low as about $1.50, but you've got to buy a lot of them. If you're doing a blood test, we're looking for 0.5 to about 4.0. That's the range. When you get above 0.5, you're producing ketones. You can get all the way up to about 4 if you're really producing a lot. The breath meter, the range is from 40 to 70. And it'll do it by lights. And, you know, when you get the device, it's pretty clear how it works.
Okay. And one more question. Where would I place my 401k and profit gauges?
You don't. The 401k, even though it can, because it's not considered a business deduction. You don't get to deduct your 401k contributions from the business. You only get to deduct them from personal tax return. So we don't recommend recording it in profit gauges at all. Just, it's still revenue to you. You can contribute to the 401k, and then, you know, that will show up on the tax return at the end of the year. I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we're going to head into a break. And when I get back, joining me, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite products. We don't talk about it a lot because people just don't think about this, but it's your clutch. One of those things you don't replace all that often, but when you need to, I'm going to tell you about a much better option. And, of course, we're talking about the Leib Clutch. So we will be right back after the break. Rajiv from Leib Clutch will be joining me, and we'll talk about the differences and why you should never drive into a shop, let somebody tell you that you need a clutch, and then just let them put whatever clutch in there. You need to be deciding what clutch you want, telling them what clutch you want, and I'm positive once you understand the difference, that will be a Leib Clutch. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Joining me right now from Leib Clutch, Rajiv in Tennessee. Rajiv, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. Great to have you here. Hey, you know, I can't believe we were probably 20 feet apart from each other for an entire 3 days, and I still didn't get a chance to see you at the truck show.
Yeah, it was. We were really busy getting a lot of end users, and I guess your booth's also packed all the time.
It is, and you know, I try to wander around and get out to everybody, and I usually get stuck, you know, with a lot of people around asking questions, which is a good thing. We love that. That's why we go to the shows. But sometimes it's frustrating that the partner companies we work so close with, where I can see them, I don't always get a chance to talk to everybody, but it sounds like you had a good show.
Yes, we had a wonderful show. We had a lot of people come to our booth and ask us questions about the product. We've been pushing the product hard for 7-8 years now as SETCO, and a lot of people are coming back to us and telling us how happy they are, and a lot of people are hearing from your wonderful radio show and coming to us and asking us about our product. So, yeah, it was a great show.
Good. You know, the one thing, this is a product that a lot of people don't think about. And what we want to do is make them think. Because, you know, with a good driver, a clutch might last 700,000-800,000 miles, sometimes more. So it's one of those things you might only replace once on a truck in its lifetime. And people just, it's one of those things where they hear they need a clutch, or they know they need a clutch, and they go into a shop and they say, I need a clutch. But they don't realize the difference in clutch design and that they should be asking for a specific clutch, not just accepting whatever the shop may have. So the reason, you know, we're so excited about Life Clutch and why we partnered with you is because it is it's a different design. And I think the design just makes a lot of sense.
Yes, absolutely. The design makes a lot of sense. It's designed with the direct pressure technology, which is what we call it, versus the Spicer design, which has an angle link design. And for the feature to work, the angles basically toggle, and that causes kind of a driveline hop, which is induced in your product, in the Spicer product. Well, our design is such that it eliminates that completely, so you have a very smooth engagement. You don't have that judder backing up into a terminal. Some of the other advantages, it's very easy to adjust. I'm not very mechanically inclined. I used to hit books growing up. I didn't grow up in a farm, and I can easily go under the truck and adjust it. The installation piece of it is also very simple. Our clutches install piece by piece. So you don't really need a lot of truck repair shops out in the country don't have clutch jacks. People have to lift the clutch, go under a creeper, and then install it into the truck. Well, you don't have to do that with our clutch. You can install it piece by piece. So a lot of advantages. The pedal load is equivalent to the Spicer style. We're slowly converting many end users one at a time.
Yeah, and that's kind of the basis of our show, that we just keep putting the information out over time, and people hear it, and then they check it out, and they realize there is a difference, and that's what we look for. We look for products that are at the very top. There are a lot of products that are the same. We look for the products that are different and better for a reason. And, you know, and Bruce Mallinson of Pittsburgh Power was the first one to introduce me to the Life, and I've always trusted, you know, Bruce and his recommendations. And as soon as I saw the design and compared it to all the other clutches, I thought, this is just one of those things that makes so much sense. This is simple. It's clean. It's easy to install, easy to adjust. And I love the feel of the clutch. It's got a very positive engagement.
Exactly. One thing we run into quite a bit, Kevin, is people are used to old habits, right? And you can have good habits or you can have bad habits. So a lot of people are so used to the current clutch that they open the box, they look at our clutch and say, oh, it looks different, or it installs different, or it adjusts different. Well, it is different because we believe it's a superior clutch. It's a better clutch. So my appeal to all your listeners is don't get nervous by the fact that it's different. If your mechanic gets nervous by the fact that it's different, let him not get nervous. He can give our tech support line a call. Our tech support number is 877-642-2419. And it's manned by a guy called Mike Scherf. He's an experienced diesel technician. He can guide anyone through the installation over the phone. I mean, he knows everything. He knows all the trucks and how their underneaths look, you know, so he can easily help. So that's something that we're constantly working on. But I have to say it's getting better. You know, we see more and more people adopting our product.
Excellent. We love that. So if somebody has, if they don't have the product yet, but they want to know more about it, where they can get it, what it's all about, what number would they call?
Well, I think they can start off with this toll-free number that I just gave it, and I'm going to repeat it again. It's 877-642-2419. And we now have a distributor pretty much in every metropolitan area in the country. And and most of these distributors, we worked with them for a while, Kevin. So, you know, they can help with the installation and such. But yeah, our tech support toll-free number would be your first starting point.
Excellent. Fantastic. Rajiv, as always, thanks for coming on and joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, very good, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Take care. We're going to head off to Montana. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. We've been talking a few times in the last couple of months. We've got qualified with Landstar, and our credit union's going to work with us for the truck loan. So everything's coming together.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah, and I know from having your program and listening to your show that the preferred specs have basically been the 12-7 and a 13-speed. Now, we've decided we want to go with the Volvo for a number of reasons. I'm not finding and I know there's a 12-7 you're kind of hesitating on right now because of the parts issue. We're having a hard time finding a lot of Volvos with N14s and a 13-speed. Is there a big compromise if we settle for a 10-speed?
No.
I'm thinking it's more important to find parts for the engine.
Yeah, it is. The 10 or the 13 isn't a big deal. In some operations, it's not even an issue. If you run fairly light and you run, you know, the southeast or the eastern part of the country, the 10-speed is just fine. In fact, I prefer a 10-speed in many operations. If you are heavy and pulling a lot of hills, the 13-speed is going to improve fuel economy a little bit, and it's going to improve drivability a little bit. But it's
okay.
Not one of those absolute no-goes. I mean, most of the trucks I've owned have all been 10-speeds. So
okay.
The 13 is nice, but it's not an absolute.
Okay, so focus on the N14 then, because of the part issue with the 12-7. All right.
Yep.
And so we're in that process, and we're still over the road. We finished up our, obviously, the time period we needed to do to meet Landstar's qualifications. Now we're just sticking around to get our team bonus and put some more money in the bank. So we're shopping around.
Good.
I've got, you know, I know we want to do an oil sample, a level one, a bumper and a mud flap, and then also the compression test, charger, cooler, but before all that, pull the rig dig. Once we pull the rig dig, we like what we see. I'm thinking that the best order is like the oil sample, and in the meantime, have the level one done and the bumper to bumper before we start spending the money on the getting it into the engine shop.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We want to do the least expensive inspections first because we're always looking for a reason not to buy the truck. You know, if you were able to pull an oil sample and, you know, the oil sample cost us $40 and we find out that this thing has high soot and high fuel. Well, it's not that we couldn't fix those things, but why start off with a problem like that? So that would eliminate that truck, and you could just move on to the next truck without spending a lot of money. So each step, you know, we try to eliminate the truck with the least amount of expense and time. So, yes, you had that exactly correct. I've got to get to a break. We will be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I'm going to head off to South Dakota this time. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Say, I've been on the ketogenic diet for probably about almost 3 months now, and I I lived with pains in my left shoulder from working on snowmobiles, pulling the rope every time somebody brings a snowmobile. Of course, you got to get it running, so you're always pulling on the rope. And
right.
I had a knee problem for many years. I'm talking 25, 28 years, something like that. I've always had a knee that acted up every once in a while. I didn't even realize that the pain went away. I just, all of a sudden, you know, I was, I decided, you know, I started working out again because I lost all this weight. And I just went down and started doing push-ups. I could only at any given time, you know, up to, you know, about 5 years after I graduated, I was lucky if I could get 25. I went down and I did 35 push-ups. I struggled the last two, but I didn't have any pain of any kind. It was just awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it.
You know, it's sometimes people hear all these things and they say, wait a minute, this sounds like one of those miracle cures, too good to be true, you know, fixes diabetes, fixes high blood pressure, fixes cholesterol, takes away your aches and pains. But there are clear explanations as to why. And we shouldn't be surprised that when we eat the right foods, our body works the way it's supposed to. We were never designed to be sick, to have illness, to have disease, to have all these aches and pains. They're all problems with the food we eat. And when you eliminate the problem foods, the problems themselves go away. The pain is pretty straightforward. It's been shown that grains and sugars are very inflammatory. So are omega-6 oils. And omega-6 oils are in all the processed foods. So when you eliminate grains, you lower sugars, you eat less processed food, you just have less inflammation in your body. So those aches and pains just go away.
Yeah, I have a question on bipolar. Does going on this diet help somebody that's bipolar?
The book that I would have you read is called Grain Brain. And it's, you know, once you go grain-free and low-carbohydrate, you're 90% of the way to being ketogenic. So, you know, we could look at diets that are paleo, diets that are low-carb, diets that are grain-free, and diets that are ketogenic. They're all slightly different, but they're all pretty similar. And
yep.
Grain Brain really talks about all of the mental aspects of what grains and sugars and high carbohydrates do. And again, it almost sounds too good to be true, but we have to know our brain wasn't designed to be diseased
foggy.
Or to have
problems.
Yeah,
not looking foggy.
No, it's not. And we're not supposed to have these wild emotional swings like bipolar disorder and autism and all these other things. Those are not a natural state. And
yeah.
Even though it sounds too good to be true, there's tons and tons of documentation in Grain Brain that when you eat a natural ketogenic or low-carb diet, you get rid of the grains, you get rid of the sugars, your brain starts running on ketones, on fat. Your body will produce glucose for the brain from proteins and fats. And those mental issues go away. And people, I've had people call me that have suffered from depression virtually their whole life. And within weeks, it goes away. Depression, anxiety, sleeplessness, all kinds of issues go away once you get the food right.
Yep. I just had my girlfriend pick up the book 2 days ago, Grain Brain.
Excellent.
Total Health.
Yep, yep. That will explain it. And again, if it's just this guy on the radio saying, hey, eat this way and all your problems will go away, it almost sounds too good to be true. When
yeah,
you read the books, when you read, it does, and there's a good explanation why. It's not hocus pocus.
But it did happen.
Excellent. Excellent.
Right,
good stuff. Glad to hear it. We are getting just phenomenal response. And I'm surprised, but I guess I shouldn't be, because everything I've read there's just such strong documentation that this really does work. Let's head off to Illinois. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, how's it going today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Well, first thing is I just picked up your scan gauge, and I absolutely love it.
Good.
Second thing is LLC tax and S-Corp, what kind of boundary line or net or the gross income do you want for that?
Yeah, we always go by net for this. This is one that is absolutely the net income. We can never project this from the gross. You know, sometimes I use the gross number to help people with how much to set aside for taxes, because that's just an estimate. But this is a pretty big decision. We want to use the net number. So that means bottom line on that Schedule C. So that means per diem comes out, depreciation comes out, all of our expenses come out, and how much are we paying self-employment tax on? That's what we're looking at. The rough number is about $65,000. If you are paying self-employment tax on about $65,000, that's a good indication that we could probably save you money overall by going to an S-Corp.
Okay, and my last question is, what book would you suggest me to have, like, my wife and my mother-in-law read so they start to understand this ketogenic diet? Because I'm seriously want to do it, but I kind of need the support of my family to help go with this.
Right, and that is important. And I will tell you, people freak out about this because we have been brainwashed to believe that fat is bad for us, cholesterol is bad for us, saturated fat will kill us, and nothing could be further from the truth. But it is going to take a long time and a lot of evidence for some people to realize this. So the best book I've read on the ketogenic part of this is Keto Clarity by Jimmy Moore. And he's not a doctor. He had horrible weight problems his whole life. He had a twin brother who died from being obese. And he finally, you know, figured out what works. But then he also went out and literally interviews hundreds of doctors, medical practitioners, researchers, nutritionists, and he's been doing this for well over a decade. And his book is written in pretty plain English, and then he's got a lot of research to back up what he talks about.
Joseph Moore, you said?
Jimmy Moore. Keto
Jimmy
Clarity.
Moore. Okay. Yeah, because part of my issue is my mother-in-law is a nurse. So that's half the battle,
you know,
right there.
Oh, that is a huge battle. So I was at the truck show, and there was a health fair, and I got asked to come over and talk about this. And I was just in a little group, and we were talking about it, and there was a nurse there. And in the beginning, she jumped in and said, oh, no, you're wrong. You know, ketogenic diets are used for this, but they have to be medically monitored because they're dangerous. And I said, hold on. Stop right there. I said, tell me what part of a ketogenic diet, which is a totally natural state to be in, tell me what part is dangerous. And she said, well, your kidneys can't handle ketones. And I said, no, you are talking about ketoacidosis, something totally different. I said, this is such a natural state that anybody who goes more than 20 hours without eating, for whatever reason, you know, when we have to go get certain blood tests or certain medical tests, many times they make you fast for 24 hours. Anybody who fasts for 24 hours becomes ketogenic. It's a natural state. There's nothing dangerous about it at all. The only time it needs to be medically supervised is if you're on some sort of prescription medication for, say, diabetes or high blood pressure. And the reason it needs to be supervised is because the diet itself is so powerful that people will virtually overdose on some of their medications in just a couple days because they'll be over-medicated because the diet works so well. So you just have to have a doctor monitor that. But if you're not on any medications, this isn't dangerous at all. It's a very natural, healthy state to be in. So Keto Clarity, another really good book to have them listen to or read is called Effortless Healing by Dr. Mercola, and that is Joseph Mercola. That's another really good one. Not just ketogenic. It talks about a lot of different things. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up here. We're heading into the fourth segment. Looks like we have a lot of questions on hold right now, so we're just going to come right back. At the end of this segment, I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up because we'll come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're off to Nebraska. George, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, I've got a couple of numbers for you. First of all, Michelin XZA2, my last set, I got 262,750 out of them. I took them off. They're still legal.
Wow, that's impressive.
My N14 is still plugging along at 1,958,000.
And that is more than impressive. That is amazing.
Yeah. On the clutch thing, oftentimes when a problem arises, it's usually just a little trash that's inside on the disc. One way to clear that out and get a couple more miles out of it so you can get to a friendly shop is to do something that sounds totally asinine, but ride the clutch a little bit. Just partially disengage it and rev the engine a few times. Do that every couple of miles so you don't overheat it. Spin some of the trash right out of there, and then you can get where you need to go.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, and a lot of people might think that's crazy, but you really, by doing that, you can clean up that surface and get a little more life out of it.
I've done that a couple times, a couple different trucks, and it, you know, like I said, I think I got an extra 10,000 out of the last one. Anyhow, let's see, there's a couple other things. Oh, another health thing, people never really think about this, but it kind of sounds hocus-pocus, but chiropractors, there's a certain type of chiropractor, it's called an upper cervical chiropractor. The only thing these guys deal with is the three topmost vertebrae, because every nerve in your body goes through those three. If they're not aligned perfectly, nothing will ever work exactly right.
It's pretty straightforward. I've always believed in chiropractors. I've gone to most of my life, and I don't have any back problems. I don't have back pain or back issues. I do have some neck issues that developed over years of wrestling and all kinds of other things. So, because for me, it's almost always on my upper, couple. A cervix and the neck area, and it makes an amazing difference. You know, it's like you said, all those nerves run through there, and all it takes is a little bit of pressure on a nerve to kind of throw the signals out of whack. It doesn't mean that you're going to be incapacitated, but it's like a truck where we get weird signals. You know, the ECM throws a code once in a while, our fuel mileage is down a little bit, and we've said that could be nothing more than a half of a volt fluctuation on a certain circuit. Your body's kind of the same way. You get a little bit of pressure on a nerve. You may not even feel any pain, but all of a sudden your kidneys might not function properly because they're not getting the right signals.
Yep. So anyways,
on the keto thing here, I've been almost zero effort with this. All I've been doing basically is salad bars, which I've been doing anyhow. And then for breakfast, you know, just get my breakfast, but order it with no potatoes and no toast and some, you know, substitute tomatoes or something like that. I was quite surprised when I hit the scale when I got home last weekend and I was down 15 pounds.
It is amazing how fast it happens.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I gained 5 of that back because I think I had a couple too many adult beverages. My wife was feeding me steak and stuff like that too. So I got it.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I'm back on the road and back on track. You know, like I said, almost zero effort. I'm doing pretty good with that. The one question I had though about that was, where does squash, like Italian squash and zucchinis and that sort of thing, where does that fit in, or does it not?
It does. You've got to be careful. Vegetables are good. There's no question. But there are some vegetables that are higher in carbs, and that's
okay.
Really what we're watching out for. We just want to watch our overall carb intake. And like summer squash, which is more like the zucchini, it's the softer types of squash, the green or the yellow. You know, let's go with, say, a cup, because that's about how much most of us would eat, a cup to 2 cups. You know, that's going to be right around 5 grams of carbs. Now, that's not horrible, but for the people who are trying to stay under 20, say, in the beginning, when you're really trying to get your body over to fat burning, 5 carbs, you're going to have to be careful. If you eat, you know, a big salad, it's going to have 6 or 7 carbs. So then later on, if you have some zucchini, you know, you're going to get pretty close. Now, for me, I'm at a range where I can do 50 or 60 carbs a day. So for me, having zucchini is not a big deal. 5 carbs isn't going to bother me when I can do 60 for the whole day. But if I were trying to do 20 for the whole day, then I would think twice about eating it. Now, the winter squash, the hard squash, some of those you've really got to watch. Some of those are like butternut squash is like 14 grams of carbs in a cup. That's pretty high. Now, you know, some of the spaghetti squash is about 7 grams of carbs for a cup. So there's nothing wrong with it. It's nutritious. It's healthy. It just needs to fit into your total carb count.
So otherwise, in moderation.
Yeah, yeah, on that.
Okay.
Now, there's some things, you know.
That's easy to do.
Some things I try to tell people, be careful with that term, everything in moderation, because that's not true. There are lots of things we shouldn't be eating at all. We shouldn't be eating processed sugar. We shouldn't be eating grains. We shouldn't be eating a lot of processed foods or seed oils, omega-6 oils. Those things are not good in moderation. You should just eliminate them completely. High-carb vegetables can be okay in moderation. That's a good time to use that phrase, in moderation. A lot of people in dieting, though, say everything in moderation. That's just not true. That is one of those sayings and myths that gets a lot of people in trouble. Let's go to Indiana. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. I just had a quick question.
I know I've heard you discuss or compare like a factory roof fairing to, say, a turbo wing or one of the fiberglass whale tails, and, you know, and as you said, there's no comparison there efficiency-wise. But how about like a factory roof fairing versus a trailer nose cone, like on the front of a van trailer or one of the soft-sided rolling park flatbed trailers?
Good question, and we don't talk about it a lot because there just aren't as many people who own their own trailer and have that option. I think the nose cone is a great addition to any trailer even if you have a fairing. Now, I've helped a lot of people make the decision to do the nose cone first if they own the truck and trailer and they don't have either one. I'll tell them get the nose cone first because it's cheap. It's inexpensive. It's easy to install, and it works really well. And then somewhere down the line, I would still look for the fairing. Having the two of them is your best bet.
Okay, but like in an operation where you might pull different trailers, sometimes a van, maybe sometimes a dump or a tank or something, I mean, the nose cone would be a good...
Then that makes total sense, yeah, because now we could skip the roof bearing because of the different profiles of the trailers and just make sure that any of our tall trailers had the nose cone on.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Oh, and one
You're
more
welcome.
Thing. Fairfax now.
Absolutely. Boy, we're heading into that time of year again, and I know I'm going to get all the questions, and it's so difficult to answer tax questions and try to cover all the different things because our tax system is just way too complicated. I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we're going to have to wrap this one up. My time is running short. So many questions, so little time, but we will come back and do it again, I promise. In the meantime, check out the website. It's letstruck.com. It's time to get some things done. If you want to take your business to the next level, it's time to get your accounting in order. We can help you with that. And it's time to get signed up for the 2016 CMC. You can find it all on the website, letstruck.com, or you can call us, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, here we go. We're going to get off to some more calls. We're going to do another hour.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your own authority. The list goes on and on. In fact, if you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. I'll do my best to get you an answer. Many times we'll get some help from the other listeners, and if you stump us all, I'll make it my personal mission to go find the answer. And speaking of questions and answers, I've got some things I was going to talk about, but we're just going to jump right to your phone calls and see what it is you want to talk about tonight. We're going to start off in Ohio. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I got a question on some tires. I bought a second truck, an old one, and it's got 24.5s on it, and I was doing a little research. And if I switch to 22.5s on it, is that going to make a big difference in my speedometer, or do I have to have the fix?
Yeah, it will make a... It will make a pretty big difference, but it's an easy fix. I mean, it's like 5 minutes. It's a matter of plugging in and changing one number in the ECM, And the number you change is what's called the tire RPM, the revolutions per mile. It'll be a number somewhere around 500. In the high fours is a very tall tire. In the low fives is going to be, you know, like 520 is pretty common for a low-profile 22.5. But every tire has an exact number. You take that number off the tire, you put it in the ECM, and your speedometer will be accurate.
Okay, I was figuring that's probably what it was. You can't do that with your scan gauge, can you?
No, you can't. The scan gauge won't write anything to the ECM. It can only read from it.
Oh, okay. Because I was looking, doing a little more research, and it said I was wondering why everybody decided to change to the smaller tire, and they said that, I don't know, a couple big fleets changed, and then they got more popular, and then everybody wants the small tires because there's no casing price really on the 24.5.
Well, the reason is rolling resistance, and the fleets weren't really the ones choosing it because they don't pay attention to this very often. It was the tire manufacturers themselves that started pushing the tires as more fuel efficient, and for the most part, they are. I mean, we have to look at each individual tire and each individual number, but a low-profile tire is more fuel efficient than a tall tire for a couple reasons. One, the smaller you make that wheel assembly, the lighter it is, so the less force it takes just to make it spin. And then the sidewall itself, the taller you make a sidewall, the more it's going to flex. And the more it flexes, the more heat we end up with and the more lost energy. So smaller, low-profile tires are more fuel efficient.
Okay. They actually said, what I read, it said that actually a 24 low pro 24.5 has actually got less rolling resistance than a 22.5, but I don't know.
That's
not
true. And the physics would even explain that, because there are several things that make up rolling resistance. One, I just talked about, the sidewall. So the smaller we make the sidewall, the better it's going to be. The other one is the compound itself, the rubber that they use. Now, that doesn't change with size, so that's just going to be what it is. But another thing that changes rolling resistance is the contact patch, how much of the tire is touching the road. Now, we don't want to make that too small because that's also what gives us traction, but the smaller we make that contact patch, the less resistance there's going to be, and the quickest way to make the contact patch smaller is make the tire smaller. Now, people will say, well, what about a wide single? Well, a wide single actually has less contact patch than two duals that it replaces. And that's another reason why wide singles tend to be less rolling resistance.
Yeah, you would, by looking at it, you'd say, no, that can't be true. But apparently it is.
Right.
All right.
It is. There's less surface contacting the road on a wide single than there is on two dual tires. So that's, again, rolling resistance is fairly complicated. Sidewall design, tread compound, tire size, all kinds of things go into that calculation. Let's go to Indiana. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What can I help you with today?
Well, I got a couple things. I wanted to start with profit gauges.
Okay.
I'm leased to a carrier, and we get to choose our own loads, use the load boards, which is something I wanted to do, but just been really struggling with revenue. And wanted you to see what you think, thought about the option of maybe going to Landstar, or I've got another friend that's got a small trucking company that takes a lower percentage. And so just wanted to bounce that off of you, see what you think.
Got it. Well, the good news is we're starting with the numbers. That always helps us make good decisions. We also have one giant unknown, and this is always something we deal with in the industry. People say, well, this carrier only takes 10%, that one takes 17%, this one. But we have to know a percentage of what. You know, it's easy to go out and get a bunch of cheap freight and then only take 10%, but if it's a bunch of cheap freight, we're not going to be able to make a whole lot of money. So that's always the biggest unknown that we're dealing with is percentage of what. Right now, rates are certainly down compared to what we were seeing in 2015. I'm looking at your numbers right now, and you're at $1.48 a mile, all miles. That's not a horrible place to start, but you really got to watch expenses closely to make an operation like that profitable. You know, last year we were seeing averages, you know, for people in contracts like Landstar and on a percentage, we were seeing guys do $1.65 plus. And a lot of the Landstar and Mercer guys were in the $1.80 range all the time. So if we think about that, if you're at $1.48 and you're controlling your expenses the same as somebody who's at $1.68, I mean, they've immediately got a 20-cent advantage. So there's no question we have to pay attention to revenue. Let's take a look at expenses. Your fixed cost looks a little bit high on insurance. Have you shopped around on any insurance at all?
No, I haven't.
You might want to, if you end up staying at this carrier, you might want to look around for insurance. You know, if you go to somebody like Landstar, you could look at theirs. You're at 10 cents a mile. I normally see that around 6 or 7. So there's a little bit of room for improvement there. Other than that, your fixed costs aren't bad at all.
I've been running pretty low miles. In fact, I was off for about 5 weeks. We moved. So, you know, that's probably part of that. You know, you got less miles to cover the fixed costs.
Yeah, that'll do it. So now that you mentioned that and I looked at the mileage, you're probably right. So that may not be a big deal. Fuel costs are at 41 cents a mile. The best I'm seeing right now is in the high 20s. There are some people running about 27 or 28 cents a mile. So there's certainly some room for improvement there. Maintenance, 22 cents a mile. What year is your truck?
2011.
Yeah, and this is fairly common. You're at 22 cents a mile, which is a lot on maintenance, but that's what these trucks take. I mean, it's the norm that we're seeing. I know it drives people crazy when I keep saying this, but the pre-emission trucks, we are still running for less than 10 cents a mile. That's total maintenance. That's even if the truck has over 1 million miles on it. The newer trucks, we're seeing in the 20-cent range. And that's a big difference. You know, that's another 10 cents a mile not in your pocket. So not horrible numbers. I'm going to get to a break. We'll come back. We'll look at the bottom line on this and then talk about where we might make some improvements. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
The website is letstruck.com. Before the break, going over a business report, and we were just getting to the bottom line. I was talking with Ed in Indiana. Ed, you still with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So when everything is said and done, you're keeping about 57 cents a mile. Not horrible, better than you can do, you know, at most company driver jobs, but there's certainly room for improvement. I think it's still reasonable to think that we can get $1.60 to $1.70 in revenue. That would add quite a bit. We could work on that fuel cost. There are things we can do for maintenance. You know, my goal on maintenance for this truck would be to try to get it down to about 15 cents a mile instead of 22. Get your fuel cost down to 35. Get your revenue up to $1.65. With those three changes alone, and that's almost where I always recommend we start, revenue, fuel, and maintenance. And a lot of times I'll just set a 10% goal. Let's try to improve each one 10%. And if you start working towards that, even if you don't make it, you'll still make a huge difference. I mean, you could take your 57 cents a mile to 75 to 80 cents pretty quick.
Yeah, I think last year I was, I believe I was like 83 or something, if I remember right.
Yeah, and that's, I think you could get back there. You know, changing carriers is always a big, big decision. Fixing fuel mileage maintenance, that stuff's just kind of a no-brainer. Making the switch on a carrier is a big decision. I don't take that lightly. I don't tell people, oh, you know, just go somewhere else. If there's anything you can do at your current carrier to increase revenue, I would work on that first. If you get to a point and you say, look, this is it. My revenue is just not going to go up. There isn't much more I can do. And you want to look for other opportunities, then you could certainly do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a way, it's up to me because I pick my own loads, but, you know, just feel like I've been getting beat up in this spot market lately. And
yeah.
So that was one of my questions, you know, is what are you seeing with Landstar drivers, you know, this year as far as average rates? And another question was with Landstar, I understand now you can, if you switch to them, you can go right to flatbed or step deck as soon as you take their securement class, so that's another option I've been thinking of if I would go with Landstar.
Yeah, and those rates are still holding fairly strong. I mean, on the van side, it's not that difficult to maintain about $1.65 a mile over there. That's about average right now. We still have plenty of guys that do over two, but they're just, they've built good relationships. They've been there a while. They've got, you know, a lot of the same freight that they pull. But even the new guys going over there are not really having any trouble staying at $1.65. So that's a fairly significant increase over what you're doing right now. And like I say, on the flatbed or step deck side, those rates are even higher.
Yeah, so, you know, that's what I've been thinking. As far as the easiest thing to do, you know, that's what I feel, revenue is the easiest to address. And I've kind of got beat up on maintenance this year. Been in the shop a couple times with, you know, DPF issues and so on and so forth. And, you know, nothing you can do about it. Truck needs it. You got to do it. And,
yeah. It just, like I say, you're not that far out of whack. This is what we see on the 2011 and newer trucks is that maintenance costs are in the low 20 cent per mile, 22, 23. I see it all the time. And it's a cost of doing business. So, like I say, my goal would be to get it to 15. And you can do that if you look at a lot of the products we talk about here. The fleet air filter saves money in maintenance costs. The OPS saves a ton of money on maintenance costs. The FAS will lower your maintenance costs. Counteract balancing beads, the Maxwell Start Module, many of the products we talk about, the Brake Safe, all great ways of lowering maintenance costs. Many of them also improve fuel economy. Those are really products that are primarily designed to lower maintenance costs. So I think you're 22. We could get it down to 15 over the next 12 months or so. Let's head off to Ohio. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. My question is about the CMC. Thanks to you expanding your program and switching locations, I get to come this year. I've missed it the last couple of years because it's sold out, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
My question, and I apologize if I've missed this on a previous show, but my question, since you switched over to the Mac Center, have they nailed down the different hotel options and how the meals are going to work? Because I know you used to have an amazing amount of meals that came with it. I'm just trying to address like a budgeting type deal, that's all.
Yeah, no problem. And this is always something to talk about because people always want to know. Meals, we pretty much still have you covered. I mean, there may be even more meals this year than in the past. So we always take care of breakfast. We always take care of snacks throughout the day and lunch. Those are all part of the program. Dinners, we usually manage to work something out. Like we always have a reception, so that takes care of dinner one night. We might have a couple other nights, and then we sometimes work out something with the hotel. So you might have to pay for a dinner or two throughout the week, but there's going to be a lot of opportunities and plenty of food. Hotels, I believe Lisa has already signed contracts with 7 hotels in the area. There are many hotels very close, so you've got lots of options to choose from. And I think they're all right around the $100 a night range, I think.
All right, sir. Well, thanks again for everything.
You're welcome. The other option this year, and we are working on some details on this, is that there is an RV park within walking distance of the Mac Center, like literally almost in the parking lot. And that's where we'll be parked for probably a month prior to the event and all throughout the event. So that is another option, whether maybe you've got shore power on your truck or you want to bring an RV. There is an RV park with hookups right there within walking distance. Let's see. Let's head off to Utah. Ben, welcome to the program.
Ben, welcome to the program. Hello?
Yep, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I just purchased a 2000 Volvo with an N14 Cummins, and I'm worried about the RPM. For example, at 55, I do 55. I'm at 1,300, at 60, almost 15, and at 6,500, it's almost 16 RPM. Is that high?
Yeah, you've probably got 390 gears and low-profile tires, and that's not a bad place to be on that N14. Now, I will tell you, at 55 miles an hour, you should get amazing fuel economy. At 60, you'll still be fine. At 65, you're certainly going to see a drop in fuel economy because of speed and RPM. So this is how I would set the truck up, because I'd like to run 55 to 60 in that range, and that's really where you're going to get your best fuel economy. So this is really a great way to set this truck up.
Okay, great, because I've been – luckily, my first couple loads have been light, like less than 2,000 pounds, and I only had to do one 42,000 pound run, and the gas gauge works, so I physically have to open the thing up and look and see how much is in there.
Okay. Now, you know, this truck should easily be in the 7 mile per gallon range at 55 to 60 without any real modifications. And this is one of those trucks that we could get up to 8.5 or 9.
I just say go between 55 and 60, and my RPMs are not as out of whack as I thought that they were.
That's a good range, you know, anywhere from 1,300 to 1,500 on that engine is a good range to be in. So as long as you're willing to drive slow, which you should be, this is a great setup. All right, I've got to get to a break. We've got more stuff right around the corner. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Roth. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Texas. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I'm calling to see if you can look over my oil sample and help me figure out why I got such horrible fuel mileage.
Okay. Let's see if we can figure it out. We've got a... I've got an oil sample here. Let me take a look at this and see if we can figure anything out. So it looks like on the sample, 626,000 on the engine and about 8,000 on the sample. Is that correct?
The sample has a little bit off in the miles. There's about 11,000 on the sample.
Okay. And what engine is this?
It's a Cummins ISX 07. It's a pre-DPF.
07 ISX. Mm-hmm. So we've got a little bit of soot, which means we're not burning the fuel completely. But other than that, I mean, this sample is really, really clean. So there's nothing that jumps out at me right away. How long have you had this truck?
I've just got the truck. It's about 3 months now that I've had it. I just got done putting 6 new injectors in.
Was that before this sample?
No, it was after. It was about 2 weeks ago.
Why did we put injectors in?
The tips on them were bad. It passed the cutout test, but the tips were overfilling the injectors and causing then the misfire and overfueling.
Hmm. There doesn't seem to be any evidence of that in here, but it can't hurt. We'll keep an eye on it. The one challenge any time we're dealing with an emission engine, and especially the ISX, because we do have more problems with that, is that we won't know why it's getting bad fuel economy. I mean, I can go through all the stuff we know, but many times it comes down to the emission system not functioning properly, and that's always where we get stuck. What do you have on this truck for tires?
It has the Firestone 695 22.5 low pro.
Okay.
I think the rolling resistance comes in at like 112.
Yeah, which isn't horrible. We're not, you know, we could maybe pick up a couple tenths there, but nothing too major. Tell me a little bit about your operation. What kind of freight, what kind of trailer, what part of the country, how fast are you driving?
And I'm pulling flatbed. My main area is seems to be the central Texas, maybe up to Minnesota and back down area. And weight-wise, it's all over the board, and same thing with the height-wise, too, of the load.
Yeah. Yeah, so how are you tracking your fuel economy right now?
Through fuel gauges.
Okay, and what is the average for the whole time you've owned the truck so far?
5.18.
Ouch. Ouch, that hurts.
It recently came up a little bit. I had my EGR removed off the truck last week.
Okay.
It came up a little bit. And then with the APU getting fixed again, it came up a little bit. At 62, I barely pulled 6 miles to the gallon with my last load. And it's just like sometimes it'll be at 6.7, other times it's barely at 6.
Yeah. Has the charger cooler been tested?
Yes, yeah, so it was tested about a month ago, and they found a leak in the boots, but they said the charger cooler held its air fine. So I told them I wanted Pacifics on it when I went to the dealer, and they just found the leaks in the boots, so we got new boots on.
Okay. Okay, good. I would replace the fuel lines on this truck. It's that time. And that's one of the things that we don't really see in the oil sample. When we have fuel restriction, you won't see anything bad. You won't see fuel dilution. You won't see soot. It's just the engine isn't getting enough fuel to perform well. And that, you know, happens around, 700,000 miles or so. You're getting close enough that I think I would just go ahead and replace those now. It certainly can't hurt, and we need to find something on this truck. Now, make sure the overhead's set right if that hasn't been done. You've tested the charger cooler. The oil sample doesn't look bad. So, honestly, I don't even know if I would bother with the overhead. I'm not seeing any real problems on that.
Yeah,
so now we can
start. When they tested the charger cooler.
Okay, good. All right, so you're good maintenance-wise. Now, we just have to decide, you know, if you're going to keep this truck, I don't know what we do with the emission problems. Maybe you've gotten some of them taken care of, but now we just start doing the modifications. Start with the cheap stuff early on, you know, air tabs, flow below, fix the aerodynamics.
But
does fleet air filter.
Flow below work on my truck? I don't have the full skirts on the side. So, like, from the fuel tank back, it's all open.
Yeah, it still does. I mean, we have a lot of...
Okay.
We look at each individual aerodynamic problem separately. You have an aerodynamic problem around the tandems. Everybody does. The flow below fixes that. It doesn't matter what kind of trailer we pull. Doesn't matter if we have skirts. It doesn't matter if it's a classic or an aerodynamic truck. The flow below will fix that problem. We're seeing good results from that. That's why I'm recommending that so strongly. But then, you know, the fleet air filter, the Pittsburgh power muffler, the synthetic oil, you know, just the FAS, move down through the line. Hopefully we can get this thing up closer to the 7 range, and maybe we'll stumble across something on the emissions that we can fix. But other than literally taking the entire emission system apart and cleaning it really well, put it back together, we do see that helping considerably on the ISX. Let's get to some more phone calls. Let's head off to Kentucky. JT, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. My question is, if anybody else ran across this, I normally just run Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana. I've moved up here. I'm running like in Ohio Valley area. And all the fuel that I've been getting up here is biomass fuel. And I've lost dang near a half mile per gallon. I'm just curious if that's average.
Yeah, it seems to be. You know, in the beginning when we started using some of the biofuels, we did start seeing some trucks that were getting better fuel economy, many that were getting worse, and it wasn't very consistent. The biomass seems to me that they're using stuff that has less energy to create the fuel. So we do tend to see a drop almost across the board with the biomass fuels, and a half mile per gallon isn't surprising.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to get away from those fuels, but we are seeing less fuel economy. Those fuels seem to have less energy in them to begin with. I'm looking at the clock, and we are coming up on a break, so I'm going to take us into a break, and when we come back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions, so stick around for that. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. While you're there, sign up for the CMC. Go ahead and make the commitment. We've made the commitment to make this a bigger, better event than ever so that we can get more people. The last several years, we've been sold out. We've had a lot of people who wanted to come and couldn't get in. We've made the commitment, and it's a big commitment. We have booked the entire Mid-America Center for an entire week. We have the whole place to ourselves, the stadium, the show floor, the meeting room space, the parking lot. We have tons of great events scheduled. There's going to be so much going on. And this year there is something for everybody. If you are brand new in the industry, but you've ever thought about becoming an owner-operator, we have an entire set of courses for you all week long. If you are an owner-operator, you want to learn how to be as profitable as possible, we have a whole week set up for you. If you are a carrier or you want to be a carrier or get your own authority, you want to know how to do that right, how to make money doing it. If you want to grow a fleet, we have an entire week set up for you. We have a lot of material on health we'll be doing this year, and the list just goes on and on. In fact, we're not even done yet. We're still lining up topics and speakers and all kinds of things. So get signed up. It takes about $100 to lock in your space, and we are shooting for $500, so help us out. Go to the website, letstruck.com, or give us a call, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We are off to Montana. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good. What can I help you with today?
Well, I just went through a brake inspection in Butte, Montana, and I've got a 2016 Freightliner, so everything turned out great on the tractor. My trailer, I've got an 05 utility, and out of compliance, I guess two is the maximum, and I had 2 1/8 on three of the brakes and two on one of them. So I've got to get them repaired, but my question is, in February, I had a bunch of work done on the suspension. I had axle bushings put in. We put new wheel bearings, brakes, slack adjusters, and mods. I'm just kind of, you know, I'm relatively new as far as owning stuff. How does an auto slack adjuster get out that much?
Lots of ways. Now, one of the first things we have to look at is how much brake pad thickness is left on these brakes.
They were brand new in February. There's still a lot. There's well over half the life.
So they're new. So one of the things that can cause a brake to become out of adjustment in the brake stroke too long is we just wear out the brakes. But that's not the case here. So we have to look at other things. The slack adjusters themselves fail all the time. I mean, it is a very, very common thing that it's just the slack adjuster itself that is the problem. There can be other brake problems that will cause the slack adjuster not to adjust properly. So we really, it just has to go back into a shop because that is how we determine. That brake stroke is everything.
Right.
That brake stroke is off. Something is wrong. We just have to go figure out what that is. This is why we were so excited about picking up the BrakeSafe product. Because had you had BrakeSafe on this trailer, we would have known a long time ago that we were past that stroke. Now, it doesn't have to be much. An eighth of an inch isn't a lot, but it's pass or fail. You're either within the stroke allowance or you're out. And on the BrakeSafe, you can literally do a walk around every day and see whether you're within the proper brake stroke or not. So, I'd highly recommend get the BrakeSafe on there. You can get it in our store. But you're just going to have to take this in, and somebody's going to have to look at the brakes, figure out why we're still out of adjustment.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I just, being brand new slack adjusters and rods and new brakes, and it just really baffled me why so soon. So there's more than likely there's another issue besides all of that.
Probably, but sometimes I've just seen where technicians are just so poorly trained that they'll put the slack adjusters on and then they'll manually adjust them and break them with brand new.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I've always been told. You don't adjust the automatic slack adjusters. So I know it can be done, but it's not recommended, correct?
It can be done. I highly recommend against it, unless it was truly an emergency situation. What I mean by that is, we know and we check our brakes, and they're out of adjustment. We can't figure out why. I would rather manually adjust them and get them right, and even if I had to replace the slack adjusters, than to try to come down the hill with my brakes out of adjustment. But other than extreme cases like that, we shouldn't be adjusting them. For two reasons. One, they're not designed to be adjusted manually. And two, all we're doing is covering up a problem. The fact that the brake is out of adjustment tells us something is broke. We can't just adjust it. We have to fix whatever is broke.
Okay. All right. They've given me 15 days to get the work done on it or before my next dispatch. I still got about 2,000 miles on this load left. So I'll have to get on the shop before the weekend, I guess. So I guess I guess my biggest question was, is it the slack adjusters themselves or are there other problems? So is an indication there's something else wrong.
It is clearly. That is the one thing I want people to understand. When that brake stroke is out of adjustment, something needs to be fixed. We can't just adjust the brakes. It's a clear indication either the slack adjuster has malfunctioned or some other part of the brake is malfunctioning and causing the problem. And all we can do is inspect it and figure it out. It's not that difficult. I mean, the brake system, for somebody who understands, it's not that complicated. Just a matter of looking to see what's causing it. But the real message is, if it's out of adjustment, something's broke.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to bounce that off of you. That's kind of what I was thinking, but I wanted to make sure I was thinking correctly. So.
Yep. You are thinking correctly. You're on the right track. It's just a matter of inspecting it. But again, the BrakeSafe is a great troubleshooting tool. Not only does it show us visually as we walk around whether our brakes are in adjustment or not, real simple. All you have to do is look. But it also helps us troubleshoot when something goes wrong. So had we had the BrakeSafe on this truck, we might be able to look at it and know what the problem is. So, again, you can get that in our store. It's at letstruck.com/store. I'm going to go to California this time. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Kevin. My question is, on a mutual fund, what is an appropriate fee for an upfront charge?
So we need to be really, really careful here because there are so many different fees that it can get very confusing. So are you talking about a sales load?
Yeah, I guess I am. The salesman says there's a 5% charge up front, and then they take care of it. But every time you add something, it's 5%.
Oh, don't. I would run the other way. That is outrageous. That's what's called a loaded mutual fund. And here's what you're paying for. You are paying for somebody to give you advice about which mutual fund to buy. And that's just a losing game because they almost never pick very well. That's what's called a sales load. You're paying a commission just to be able to buy the fund when there's all kinds of no-load funds that have zero upfront sales charge. So that's the first charge we want to eliminate in mutual funds. We don't want to be paying anybody a sales load. That's just crazy. Then there are management fees. Now, we can avoid the sales load by buying a no-load mutual fund. We can avoid the management fee by getting an index mutual fund so that it's not managed. It just follows an index. And if we just do those two things, we wipe out the two biggest fees most people are paying. That makes a huge difference. Now, every mutual fund has expenses. So this is where we can get down to the nitty-gritty of choosing the least expensive family of funds. So one of the places, if you're going to do a 401k, and I'm getting ready to put together a program with this company. In fact, I have to call them this week. America'sBest401k.com. Hands down, the best program I've seen anywhere. This is actually, Anthony Robbins is actually a partner in this company. He's one of the principals. And I love their program. So I'm in touch with their CEO, and we are going to try to put together some sort of a program designed just for owner-operators and small fleets. So that's something coming up. And then that kind of eliminates all the questions about fees. No sales load, no management fee because we're going to use index funds, and then very, very low expense fees. That way your money is working and growing for you, not for the mutual fund company. So great question. That's as simple as I can make it right now, that we have to get no-load mutual funds to avoid the sales load. We have to get index funds to avoid the management fees. And then we have to look for just very low expenses. And, again, that can all be accomplished through America401k.com. Now, you can certainly go to them now and work with them, and you don't have to wait for us. You'll get a great deal. We don't have any special program with them right now. So if you wanted to call them and just do it yourself, you can. I'm going to be working on putting together a program with them, though. And we'll certainly keep you updated on that. There's the music. That means I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. And master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here tomorrow.